One of the hardest parts of getting older is feeling like something's off in your body, but not knowing exactly what. It's not just aging. It's often your hormones, too. When they fall out of balance, everything feels off. But here's the good news. This doesn't have to be the story of your next chapter. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is an herbal formula made with science-backed ingredients designed to fine-tune your hormones by balancing estrogen, testosterone, progesterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol. It helps with common issues such as hot flashes, poor sleep, low energy, bloating, and more. With over 40,000 reviews and a bottle sold every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. A survey found 86% of women lost weight, 77% saw an improved mood, and 100% felt like themselves again. Start your next chapter feeling balanced and in control. For a limited time, get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com with code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today. And get your old self back naturally.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
The Texans take down the Dolphins and, with a little help from the Broncos, take the AFC South. We're going to talk about all that and more on this edition of The Bullpen. Hello and welcome to the first bullpen episode this season with the Texans as the AFC South champions. Back-to-back AFC South champions, Brian. Back-to-back. That reference, I think, may go over some people's heads, but I mean, I don't know. I love that press conference, and it was one of the few moments of Bill O'Brien's tenure that it is a fond memory in some way for me. But Tom, how does it feel? Texans have the AFC South in their back pocket. That's what they've got.
It feels good. I mean, I kind of always expected this, but you know, you still get the work has to get done. So credit to the Texans for doing the work. I know a lot of people struggled with, you know, the way they play and how they win games and things of that nature. But if I told you week one, you know, we get week 15, you'd be 9-5 and you'd be AFC champs at that point, probably like, hell yeah, I take that. So here we are.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, and the Texans, before the season started, the Dolphins were viewed as the start of a very difficult stretch of the Texans' schedule. So to have less than 10 wins at this point in the season and have the division already locked up removes a lot of pressure, I think, for the Texans. Going into a stretch with the Chiefs and the Ravens, they can kind of figure out who they are. I think the real test is going to be, can the Texans defense be enough in those matchups to give the Texans a chance to win those matchups in the regular season? And then we'll see how it plays out. You know, those are definitely high potential for playoff matchups. So it's great. I mean, all the pressure is off now. However the Texans play is just going to, you'll hear me complain about it in some way because I want to see them show something that will give me faith that they can win in the playoffs. But I mean, they have the playoffs now. That's not the question anymore. We're not concerned about the Texans' playoff berth. It's here. So let's talk about the game. I don't want to bury the lead here. So we'll start with this because I feel like there's a trend in some people's heads that is establishing the Texans as this villain, dirty team, and that this defense, it's Super Bowl caliber. Anyone who's telling you it's not is not watching the Texans defense play. There's also this impression, I guess, around the league now that the Texans just play dirty football. So I want to hear your thoughts. I'm not even – no context at all on this. I just want to hear your thoughts on the Grant DuBose hit by Kalen Bullock.
It's a bang-bang play, man. I hate it for Grant DuBose. You hate it for any player, but – this isn't the first time you see something of that nature. Obviously, you know, it was worse what became of it. But, you know, I don't think the Texans are dirty players. I think their swarm mentality, I think you know, they embody their coach, which is to play with your hair on fire. You see guys flying around the football field. It's what they want to be. It's what I think all defenses want to be. They want to be a fast and ferocious and hard-hitting and physical and you know, unrelenting defense. And I think you're seeing what happens when, you know, situations kind of bring themselves to a point where, you know, players put themselves in compromising positions, and it's really hard to turn off that uncompromising, unrelenting, swarming, fast-paced, high-octane defense all the time. I mean, you would like all these guys to pull up and think about player safety, but it's a very violent game, a very brutal sport, and, you know, these things happen. You don't wish that they happened, but at no point did I see that and go, oh, Kalen Bullock's a dirty player. When Azeez made the hit on Trevor Lawrence, oh, Azeez Al-Shaair is a dirty player. I don't feel that way. Now, people are going to say I'm biased, but if you take all of that out of there, there's been way worse hits that have happened in this league by players where it was just like, look, wrong place, wrong time. Some players were dirty or whatever, but I really don't feel like the Texans are out here. Their coach doesn't feel like a guy that's over here saying, oh no, I want you to hurt people. You know, there are coaches
like Bounty Gate.
There are coaches around the league. Coordinator for defense here. There are coaches around the league that, you know, will say I want them to feel us, you know, and mean, I want you to knock the snot out of somebody. D'Amico Ryans doesn't act that way. Now, what he coaches behind closed doors, maybe he is that way, but I don't see it. I think he wants to play fast, physical football. And sometimes when you do that, you know, two trains collide, and that's kind of what happened in that instance.
I'm glad you brought up dirtier hits that have happened in history, because I remember when we initially talked about the Azeez Al-Shaair hit, you said that Ryan Clark had an opinion on it that wasn't, oh, it's a bang-bang play in favor of the defender. And knowing Ryan Clark's history, I better not hear that he's going to say something about this hit from Kalen Bullock, because Ryan Clark has had plenty more lead time on preventing that kind of hit and purposefully like laid a guy out on that kind of ball. Now, that being said, I think that the train of thought that's prevailing in most competent people's minds is that this rests on Tua's shoulders. Tua put a hospital ball out there and asked Grant DuBose to catch it, who, by the way, Grant DuBose, if you were watching the game, was not playing before that point. He had maybe been in a couple plays because there was an injury to another Dolphins wide receiver earlier in that game. I believe it was the drive before. So he had not had a lot of plays to that point. And then Tua said, oh, here you go, and put it. It was very, like, we already tried to explain how, like, Azeez Al-Shaair's hit, which was probably more questionable than this in terms of like how clean or dirty it was not like purposeful. It was very obvious that like he was already establishing his load. He had loaded up and was ready to deliver a hit. And Trevor Lawrence's sudden movement from, you know, up here to down here created that, right? And so looking at Kalen Bullock had even less time. I believe we established 300 milliseconds for Azeez Al-Shaair. I'd bet it's under 200 for Kalen Bullock. And so once again, it's another thing where the receiver is defenseless, put in a bad spot by the quarterback. DuBose probably had half a second where he like turned, saw Kalen Bullock, and maybe he moved in a way that like both guys are trying to avoid the big hit, right? And so in that process, they probably just made it worse. That's like usually how that goes. So the report on Grant DuBose, by the way, is that he's doing good. He's in stable condition, and that the cause of the injury is not believed to be helmet-to-helmet contact from Kalen Bullock. It's believed to be the impact of the ground on Grant DuBose's head. Now, still, Kalen Bullock's involved in the hit. There's that part of it. Not trying to exonerate Kalen Bullock of any issues here, but like realistically, if we're dividing the blame for this hit, I'd give 80% of it to Tua for putting that ball out there. It was a Derek Carr special, a hospital ball. He called the ambulance before he threw it.
In Tua's defense, he didn't see Kalen Bullock all game. He threw him two footballs because he did not see him in the center of the field. So Tua would probably tell you he didn't see Kalen Bullock, and that's why he threw Grant DuBose that ball. Not because, oh, this is going to be at a tight window. Maybe he can catch it and get down before he gets hit. Kalen Bullock was out there just invisible all game because
an invisibility cloak on.
He had a pick. He had another.
Was it good coverage that was concealing him, or do you think Tua might need to invest in the same eye surgeon that Jameis Winston used?
I think it was really good coverage. I want to give the Texans a lot of credit here. I mean, they were playing really good football on the defensive side. I agree with you. I've been saying it for a while. This is a Super Bowl caliber defense. And unlike the statement you made earlier saying, well, if the defense can play well enough, I think it's the other way around. I think the defense shows up every week. I think it's, can the offense put up enough points to assist the defense in getting these dubs?
I don't want to be misunderstood here. The point I'm making is it's not can the defense play well enough. The defense has consistently done that. Is the defense's consistent excellency enough to overcome the offense's inability to show up at times? I obviously agree with you that the offense, if they show up, it takes a lot of the burden off the defense, and this Texans team is Super Bowl bound with an offense that plays at like half of what we thought they would be going into the season, and we just haven't really seen that. But let's stick with the defense. Let's talk about it. So Christian Harris took like 90% of the snaps in this game. You said it best going into this week. The expectation was just, you know, oh, I'm happy that Christian Harris is in the game. But Christian Harris stepped up and showed up, and Henry Toutoua had the green dot on his helmet. He was calling the plays, and there was some people I think maybe we're not watching the same game as all of us and had some bad things to say about Toutoua, but the PFF score and the eye test kind of combined to make what was a very good game for Toutoua. What are your thoughts on this linebacker group, sans Azeez Al-Shaair, against this Dolphins team?
I think it's elite. I really do. And it was a point of question going into the season. We didn't know what Henry Toutoua was going to be because last season he wasn't this guy. He lost a lot of weight, came in, he's faster. He's just playing better football. Azeez, I think we knew he'd be good, but I don't think anybody thought he would be as good. And Christian Harris, everybody expected him to show up, and then he's got a mystery injury, and he's out for 14 weeks. So I know in D'Amico's postgame presser, he was like, look, the intent was not to play him as much as we did. We just wanted to kind of get him out there, get his feet wet. But he showed up with so much energy, and he'd clearly been working. So we let him go as far as he would go, and he wanted to be out there. So for me, I think that's great. I think Christian Harris knows how important he is. He played phenomenal. I think having Toutoua be able to call plays is also great. I think having that versatility amongst the linebackers to where, you know, you can have that if something happens to one of them, I think is very important. And it's crazy how good this team is now when you start to look at all the different levels and how well these levels are playing. I mean, they're really making good offenses look average, and they're making bad offenses look non-existent.
Yeah, and we talked going into the season about the vitality of the pass rush, and I think we put a lot of emphasis on the defensive line. But as any person who's watched a significant amount of football knows, the linebacking core does just about everything the defensive line does and is asked to do a lot of what the secondary does. They're basically the jack of all trades on defense, and it will be very readily apparent if your linebacking core is not good pretty much from the jump. If anyone makes a mistake in any other facet of the game, the first place where it'll show is where the linebackers are on the second level. So this linebacking room being as elite as it is, with as many injuries as they've had, I think we can safely say that our view of the linebacker room going into the season was maybe not correct. And I think we've said that several times throughout the season. It's not the first time we have looked back at that talking point and been like, wow, maybe it's a good thing we are not the GM of the Houston Texans and that we aren't building that roster. Because I mean, even Neville Hewitt has been great. And the roster structure was just like basically centered around this concept that always seemed to take care of itself, which was that if a linebacker gets injured, we're basically going to ask a special team superstar to fill in. And there were so few times where the injuries were so bad at the linebacking position that we were asked to do that. And Neville Hewitt and Jake Hansen stepped up when they needed to. So this room is deep. It's almost the best part of the defense. If it wasn't for as good as the secondary is and as good there, it's troublesome to find the best part of this defense because just as a unit, they swarm. They get after it. And I don't know if you had to pick, right? That's what I'll ask you next. If you had to pick between D-line, linebacking group, and secondary, you can rank them 1 to 3. You can just say one of them if you want. But, like, where would you, if you had to pick, like, the heart and soul of this Texans defense, where is it at?
For me, I really feel like it's the D-line. You've got just some amazing talent there. And I think they generate a ton of pressure. And don't get me wrong, the linebackers are making plays all over the place. They're stopping some of these plays that are at the line of scrimmage, and it's so important to getting off the field, you know, as opposed to drives extending. The secondary, when you've got corners that can be very shut down, when you've got safeties that are not afraid to hit, I mean, you've got safeties that are ball hawks. You have great talent in those respects. But for me, I think number one is the D-line. I think when you got guys on the interior that are very talented and very hungry, it makes the guys on the outside that much better. You know, we talked about Mario Edwards a lot at different points of the season, Tim Settle a lot at different points of the season, DeMeco Autry a lot at different points of the season, and those are your guys at the middle. And then you know, Foley Fadakasi, he's also, you know, in that group. And then
the deep group.
It really is. And then, you know, people get upset because, well, the headliners didn't ball out. You know, Danielle Hunter's got one sack and Will Anderson's got one sack. Well, that's just average. It's like, well, yeah, it's because they're funneling all this traffic through the middle, and you're seeing Mario Edwards eat, you're seeing DeMeco Autry, you're seeing all these other guys perform well because the line as a unit is just really good at making things difficult. And to me, that gets everything started. And I love the way Tim Settle feels, you know, like underappreciated, and y'all quit playing with me. You know, if you watch any of his post-game interviews, that's a guy that's got a chip on his shoulder that's like the size of a pizza. You know,
imagine like the running joke this offseason. I made it because I'm the kind of guy who likes a good pun, but I mean, the running joke this offseason was like, oh, the Texans couldn't get Arik Armstead. They couldn't retain any, you know, Sheldon Rankins. They couldn't go out and get Christian Wilkins, whatever defensive tackle was on your wish list this season did not get signed by the Texans. And the running joke was like, oh, well, they just, you know, they settled for Settle. So like, if that was the running joke on my name and I came into the season and was having the season that I was, that he's having, yeah, I'd be vocal about that. And to speak to answering the question myself, I mean, it's hard not to say defensive line, but since you said it, I'm going to try and find a reason to not say it. It starts there. I mean, and I think for the same reason that the interior defensive line kind of overcame, like, you know, we were like, oh, well, DeMeco Autry suspended, and you're talking about cycling in three guys who were not all-star names into this rotation, but it became so good that, like, it was like they basically have three starters just cycling through and playing the position. And then they're like, well, when DeMeco Autry comes back, like, how is this going to look? And it's always looked good. The defensive line group, especially interior wise, has been great. So I would say a similar thing with the linebacking room is why I think that's probably the heart and soul of the team. I also view the linebacker position as like the quarterback of the defense. So like, I think that a lot of what they call out, and that's one of the reasons that Tua Tagovailoa's performance was really good against the Dolphins, was more so than what he was physically dominant, but like what he was calling out protections, and he was guiding the defense from a strategy standpoint that like really I feel like was, you know, one of the more important parts of this defense's success this Sunday. And I'd like to see going forward how he's going to do with those dudes, because Azeez Al-Shaair's out for the next 2 weeks, so when he comes back, You have a linebacking room that is Christian Harris, Henry Toa, Devin White, Azeez Al-Shaair, Neville Hewitt, Jake Hansen. It's stacked top to bottom. I don't know who gets cut from the Texans. I don't even know if Miles Bryan is on the roster, but I feel like if he is, that's the guy. But I feel like that you carry a bunch of linebackers and a bunch of defensive linemen, and that's the other part of it too, is that like this secondary, it's not really, I don't want to say it's not a deep group because the safety room has had to show up in that way. But in a way, at cornerback, it's not deep. It's just really good at the top. like to the point where nickel is not being played by a cornerback on most downs. So yeah, I would say linebacker. It just goes, we talked about it throughout the offseason, but the short of it is that if the defensive line doesn't get there, who do you look at? The linebackers. And then if they can't make the stop, then who's there? It goes by levels. And so when you are the last line of defense, like, it is great to have guys that do that. But when, what we've seen from this Texans defense all season is that the linebackers and the D-line have done such a great job of wreaking havoc that I think it almost makes the job a lot easier than it should be for this Texans secondary. But when they've been challenged, they've obviously stepped up. So I feel good about this group, and I feel good about this defense.
Are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes? If you're a woman, you're not alone. With over 1,000 hormone disruptors in our environment, it's no wonder things can feel out of balance. On top of that, natural changes like PMS, menopause, and other life stages can leave you feeling tired, irritable, and trapped in a constant battle with your body. But here's the good news. You don't have to suffer through it. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is here to help. This herbal formula fine-tunes your hormones, balancing estrogen, testosterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol, which can contribute to weight gain, racing thoughts, poor sleep, and more. With over 40,000 five-star reviews and a bottle selling every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. Ready to feel like yourself again? For a limited time, get 15% off your first order at happymammoth.com using code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
And with that, let's talk about this offense, because I think, you know, AFC South champions, great. I'm super excited about that. But if there's one thing that immediately thinking about it makes me less excited about it, it's probably the offense just as a whole. But there's so many good things going on offense. So what I want to point out is what might make some people concerned, and I want to get your thoughts on it, which is that CJ Stroud, under 200 yards, it was a two-touchdown game, no turnovers. And I've talked extensively about how right now for CJ Stroud, no turnovers, great. That's a great game for CJ. I don't care if he throws for 50 yards. 50 yards, two touchdowns, and no turnovers, great game for CJ.
He did have a turnover, though.
Oh, yeah, he had the fumble, didn't he? Yeah, okay. No interceptions. Fumbles, that's one thing. That's a combined effort. CJ, when he throws a pick, typically it's on him. Sometimes it's on the receiver, but like a fumble, I guess pocket awareness, but if they're letting the guys get in there, I don't know. Anyway, I treat fumbles in my head a little different from interceptions, which is why it didn't register in my head when I was talking about that. But limited turnovers, right, from CJ. I thought it was a good game from CJ in that regard, and especially on the two touchdowns that he threw to Nico Collins. I pointed out on Twitter, I think that what we saw on those plays is very similar to what made CJ so great last season, the moving around in the pocket, head on the swivel, you know, getting away from the pressure, always eyes on the next, you know, next move, making those, like that throw to Nico on the first touchdown, that sidearm kind of Pat Mahomes type stuff that he did is like what the cowboy quarterback kind of thing. Like that's what's missing from CJ's game this season is the, okay, it's all broken down, I got to save it. But yeah, I mean, obviously the O-line in this game looked very similar last season, so that might've been part of it. But what do you think of CJ's performance? Just, you know, some people are going to look at the stats and not go that deep into it. What are your thoughts?
I'm going to look at the stats and go that deep into it because while CJ, how do I put this? In the post game that I did with Rob, I really talked about how these are growing pains. I don't think he's finished product. I don't think that you're getting, you know, 100% CJ. CJ had a magical rookie season, and his mistakes were few and far between. And I don't know if that was, you know, just great timing, just a little luck. I mean, I feel like every quarterback's got to have a little luck, but you know, CJ made mistakes that you can't make if you want to win playoff games. And while the defense did a phenomenal job and, you know, they scored enough points to win, you know, they left points on the board again. And we feel like we talk about it every week, how they leave points on the board. So I'm gonna take you to specific moments. Obviously, the turnover, can't have that. They're driving. They've got an opportunity to put points on the board. And he's surveying the defense. Either you don't love Patterson for snapping the ball, or you don't love CJ for not, you know, having it down. You pick your poison there. I tend to think CJ is the guy, unless you believe that it's Patterson, and then, well, then we need to have a conversation.
I'll say right here, I put that on Patterson. It didn't look like CJ called for the snap. And unless CJ says otherwise, I would say that snapping the ball when CJ was not asking for it is on Patterson 100%.
Well, then we have to have a conversation about center, because the few sacks that happened, they came up the middle early, and obviously they got home along the right side late because Titus Howard's now left guard. So the offensive line is what it is. It's a nightmare. But for me, when you look at that pick that Kalen Bullock had right before the half, puts him on the 5-yard line. They've got 23 seconds left, 2 timeouts, and they come away with a field goal in which CJ has the ball and looking for a guy, can't find a guy, kind of okay, now I'm going to scramble out. Well, then he just runs out of bounds.
Yeah, I know that play. Yeah.
And it's like, CJ, you have to have the awareness to throw it out of the back of the end zone and save the time. And then it's like the whole series of plays just felt like we're so good with 3 points. And in my opinion, in that specific time, the great quarterbacks are getting you a score, and they're double dipping on the second on the first possession of the second half, and they're putting the game out of reach and just putting you in uncomfortable positions, making it easier on their defense. And I felt like whether it was CJ, whether it was Bobby Slowick, you can't do that. You got to have more awareness. He at least needed to not waste the 5 or 6 seconds that he wasted on that one play to have another opportunity to throw at the end zone. And
it's one thing if he gained some yards on that scramble, but to run, to get out of bounds, like the ball will move quicker from your arm. Once you've exited the pocket, throw it, get it out of there. If you're in the pocket, find a receiver in the back of the end zone and act like you're throwing at him. I don't know. Just get rid of the ball.
And then the play right before the field goal that, you know, ended up being a throw to John Metchie on the 1-yard line. I've got to have a play that gets the ball into Nico's hands. I've got to. I've got to isolate him on one side, throw a jump ball, something. Give that man an opportunity to go get a touchdown. And
Nico's that good. You don't have to hide that. You don't have to hide your hand there.
Our best is better than your best. And just do it. The good teams do that. They know, the whole building knows what you're going to do, and they do it anyway.
Giving Jalen Ramsey a little too much respect right now. It's been a few years since he was the prime, you know, corner that they thought he was.
So that drive really, really bothered me, because I just felt like, and then there was a couple plays where he just misses Nico, and it's like, even he owned him, but you know, these are plays that, you know, you normally don't see him miss. He's super accurate. They talk about his accuracy. There was a sack that he took where it's like third and two. It was third and two. He's got the check down right there. 2 yards in front of him is Joe Mixon, and he's one-on-one with a linebacker, and he looks at him, and he's got the time to get him the football and get the first down. Instead, he tries to evade the pocket to extend, and he gets tripped up. You know, somebody grabs his ankle, and it's just like, these are things that good quarterbacks don't do. And I get it. He's looking for home runs. He's looking for triples and doubles, to use baseball references. But he's got the singles, man. He's got them right there. Joe Mixon is such a weapon out of the backfield. Dalton Schultz.
Play some small ball.
Very sure hand. Exactly. And these are things that week in and week out, we see him look past an open wide receiver to look for a bigger play. And it's like, just take the five, take the 7 yards and keep moving. Put yourself in second and three instead of third and 10. And we do this week in and week out. And at this point, I don't want to put it on Bobby Sloak because I see it. I see the check down. I see the answer. Okay, you don't have it? There he is. Do it. And we don't get those plays. And it's easy for me to call it from the couch. But, you know, week in and week out, we're seeing similar situations. So that's just something that I hope comes a time where he's more patient with, okay, I don't have to get it all in three plays. I don't have to get it all in, you know, 10 yards. I can little by little.
Well, yeah, and the Texans have offense, especially last season and this season, it isn't as apparent because they're not hitting on these plays as much as they used to. But the offense in 2023 lived or died by explosive plays. Like, you could tell the game was not going to go well for the offense the second that CJ wasn't hitting those plays, which was rare, which is why the Texans offense was able to do what it did last season. This season, it's almost comforting to see them rely on defense to get to the point where they are, right? Because, like, going into, you know, clinching the playoffs against the Colts, that was a game where, like, it was CJ, first play, hit Nico deep, like, you know, explosive plays and offense that was prime and ready to go. So going into the Browns game, the concern was the Browns defense was really good. The Texans offense showed up. The concern against the Ravens defense is really good. The you know, Texans offense did not show up. And that is what we got from those playoff games. So now going into this, we know what the Texans defense is. The Texans defense is elite. The question is will the offense show up instead of, you know, knowing that the offense needs to show up for the team to be good. We know that the Texans can win games with less than stellar offense, but we need to see them show up for to get like the warm and fuzzies that is going to be it. And that's why early in the episode I pointed out, like, this, it's nice to have the division locked up because these next few weeks there will be people talking about getting as high as the second seed, which is definitely possible with the tiebreaker over the Bills. Is it likely? I'm not even really looking at that. I mean, as someone who has preached the necessity of home field advantage for the Texans in the playoffs, having the two seed would be great. If the Chiefs' magic runs out in the first game that they play, the Texans would have home field the entire playoffs, which would be a God's gift to the Texans. It would be a sign from above that the Texans are destined to make the Super Bowl this year. But I'm not looking that far ahead. I want to see against the Chiefs, regardless of if Mahomes plays, I want to see this Texans offense play against a good defense, which the Chiefs have, and I want to see them produce in the first and second half. I don't need it to be like 40 points against the Chiefs. Put up, you know, 24 points over the course of the whole game. Don't go silent in any of the halves, and just generally, you know, drives that are kind of sustained. Maybe you get close to field goal range, you don't quite get it. Something that we can like build on. Which, to speak to, I feel like the Texans offense was better in this game and has been getting better since the Lions game in a lot of the ways that it needs to. You spoke to it in your answer, right, with the fact that you're like, I'm seeing the checkdowns now. I can't put it on Bobby, right? When you can't put it on Bobby, okay? Well, I'm looking at the offensive line. The Texans shuffled it. It looks a little closer to last year. It's not great. That was never, ever going to be a thing. I think we both beat that horse to death in terms of how likely it was the Texans were going to just suddenly have an excellent offensive line in the middle of the season after realizing that they invested way too many assets in an offensive line that is not good. But it is far better in the configuration that they've gotten it to. Like you said, the interior offensive line's always been a weakness. We kind of saw, and I said as much throughout this, which is that Jarrett Patterson last season was good for like three really good games, and then he had one really bad one, and then he got injured. So like, we were looking for the Jarrett Patterson, like, oh, wow, Jarrett, you did not snap the ball right at CJ when he wasn't looking, and you kind of let a lot of pressure in the middle. Okay, cool. You get a pass now. We won the game, and we're AFC South champions. Don't do it again, okay? Titus Howard is a tackle playing left guard, so whatever happens there happens. I don't know. But the offensive line, you cannot deny that it has improved over the past couple weeks with the adjustments that they made. And that brings up another thing, which is that we've been begging this team to make adjustments on offense. And finally we see, okay, well, they're putting, you know, that guard they picked up from the Patriots is getting a bunch of run. And no, Kenyon Green's not ready to come back yet. So we'll shift Titus Howard over there. We feel like that's the best option. Where was this 3 weeks ago? Like, and I guess that's where it started. Where was this 4 or 5 weeks ago? there was an outcry for like, hey, can we do anything to fix the offensive line that doesn't involve an injured player? And the Texans have finally listened to that. So in every – I talked to you about the three, right? The three is CJ, Bobby Slowick, and the offensive line. That is the three things that this offense needs to get right in order to get right. And so in this game, as much as I don't think CJ had the worst game ever, he is the one who showed the least improvement from game to game out of those three categories. And so I'm interested to see how he looks. That's my focus over the next 3 weeks. As much as some people think we should just put the starters on the bench or whatever, my focus the next 3 weeks is, okay, what is CJ Stroud doing? How does CJ Stroud look? Now, we can't say it's the offensive scheme as much as some people will still cling to that. We can't say it's the offensive line because it's improved. It's not great, but it's better. What are we getting from CJ? And so I saw signs of improvement. I'm not going to say he didn't improve. He's gotten better, though the stat, some people will look at the stat line and not say that. But yeah, the Texans offense has overall improved, but it's definitely the reason I don't have full confidence in this Texans team going into the playoffs like I probably should based off of how we felt going into the season. So, I mean, on that note, Tom, let's just – I mean, I want to know, how do you feel about the Texans team going to the playoffs?
I feel great, but it's not about the offense. They have not improved. Everything you just said right now, I totally disagree. The offensive line, the adjustments they made, still allowed 4 sacks against the worst team in the league in creating sacks. Like, everything that everybody wants to, like, point at is like, and it's really just, I guess it's just Kenyon Green slander. Everybody wants to make this about Kenyon Green. They need the smoking gun. When I truly believe it's the entire offensive line, it's just not good. And they moved Titus Howard and he struggled. And I mean, Blake Fisher tried, but he struggled. He got steamrolled one time. And it's just like, CJ had the ball and had somebody on him by the time he got to look up. It's just so bad. And I do believe it will be a point of emphasis in the offseason, and when they have time to address it, they will. But, you know, the offense didn't score a ton of points. They scored just enough. I believe that it's funny that you say, well, they have to have points all the way throughout. And it's like, they score 24 points. They score 24 points. I think there's a lot of nitpicking that people do where it's like, well, they didn't do anything in the third quarter, or they didn't do anything in the first half. And it's like, I don't know how to tell people this, but football's very hard, and you just can't get 7 every quarter and that gets you to your 28. You know, like if you get 14 in the first quarter and 10 in the second quarter and nothing after, well, you can, I guess you can have that argument. But for me, I just want to see them move the ball up and down the field. This game, they did not do that, and the numbers bear it out. They didn't run for a ton of yards. They didn't throw for a ton of yards. They just had great field position because they turned Miami over a ton. So now, did they capitalize when they needed to? Absolutely.
They just need to do that in the playoffs now with every team just put – and that's, I guess, is another point to be made, which is that the Texans offense is great when they're given the ball in great field position. Probably not as good as they should be considering they're starting from the opponent's 35-yard line on average, but they're putting up points and, you know, doing what they need to do, taking care of business. And I agree with you that those points can come at any point in the game. I just hate the game flow of like, oh, look, the Texans are up 20-6 to, oh, wow, the Dolphins literally threw it directly to Derek Stingley to end the game. Otherwise, this would have been a potential game tying drive to send it to overtime because we let him hang around. It's not my favorite thing to see. So
they didn't throw it to Derek Stingley. They threw it to Tyreek Hill.
He took it from Tyreek. Tyreek
caught the ball. That was a bad description. And Derek Stingley said, "You cannot have this.
Hang in the Louvre.
This is mine.
Hang in the Louvre.
You may go now. I'm taking this football. You may go now, and we're gonna go the other way.
You may go now." It was wild. ML Football had posted a photo. I don't know if they originally made it or if they shared it from someone else's account, but they put Derek Stingley's face over the cop that was arresting Tyreek Hill. I was like, man, that is not what I would have done, but
yeah,
more power to you.
It's a choice.
It is a choice to do that. The one that I thought was funny was like the one where it's like Derek Stingley with like a baby Tyreek Hill, like, you know, that I think was more lighthearted. But yeah, this Texans team is clamps. They're doing great. At least the defense is. And the hope is over the next three to four weeks, the Texans offense figures it out. But hey, we have Texans football, Texans playoff football in Houston. I'll leave you with this one last question. I posted it on Twitter. I'm going to leave it more open-ended for you. Of the players on this Texans defense, who do you think has made the best case for defensive player of the year this season?
Derek Stingley Jr. Pay that man.
Pay him so right much money.
Now. All of it. Don't play with him. Just pay him. Just go ahead and extend him. I don't want another Alex Bregman type saga where we're back and forth with numbers. Get that man under contract right now, because it's going to be more expensive when he's a free agent. Teams are going to offer him the moon. This dude is very shut down. I don't see anybody talking about Sauce Gardner in the same vein as Derek Stingley Jr. anymore, and that was not a thing.
Doesn't Sauce Gardner have two career interceptions? I'm pretty sure it's the case, and if it is, that means that Derek Stingley has multiple games where he has as many interceptions as Sauce Gardner has in his career, which is insane considering the nasty narrative that was formed around him. And so, and I posted I think they deleted it eventually, but someone posted the video of the Jets war room when they saw us take Derek Stingley, and they knew they were going to get Sauce. I was like, man, they look like they thought they got, you know, Justin Jefferson after the team before him took Jalen Reagor. Like, and I'm like, man, it's not to talk down to Sauce Gardner. Sauce Gardner is a good cornerback. He relies a bit on holding, doesn't produce turnover numbers quite as good as Derek Stingley, but like, he's good in coverage. He's not a bust by any stretch. Like, so it's not to knock Sauce down. It's just to say that they've been putting Derek Stingley down for so long that like he has definitely commanded that attention over the past, you know, couple seasons, I would say. But I agree with you. I think that Derek Stingley has made a fine case for defensive player of the year. I think that due to the general tendency of the committee to lean towards like defensive line linebacker types, that maybe the player that's made the best case is either Danielle Hunter or Will Anderson Jr. I think Will Anderson Jr. would be a clear cut front runner if he didn't spend a couple weeks injured. But even so, 10.5 sack season. The problem is that with all of these players on the Texans defense, it's not like they're having the clear-cut defensive player of the year season relative to the entire league. They are doing really well, but like there are other. I'd say it's like the Heisman race where it was like Travis Hunter and Ashton Jeanty. This is the first time I've said Ashton Jeanty's name out loud, so I hope I said it correctly. but I would compare it to that where like it at defensive player of the year. At any position you name a Texan that's in it, like you can think of a player around the league that maybe also has a right to lay claim to it and could win it, maybe. So I think that Derek Stingley could separate himself with a few more picks and a continuation of Stingley Island in Houston for the next three games. I think that would do it. And that's the name. Him and Will Anderson Jr. are the two that I personally think have the best shot at that and can still kind of put their mark on it, still have a couple games to kind of like make their case a lot stronger.
Derek Stingley Jr. has 5 interceptions. Right now he would be tied for 4th. Ironically enough, with his teammate, Kalen Bullock.
who has more than him?
Kirby Joseph with 7, Xavier McKinney with 7, and Byron Murphy with 6.
Okay, yeah. So, and that's the thing is that like, what stats do you use to make the case for a defensive lineman versus the defensive player of the year award? I guess is more up for grabs than say offensive player of the year, which, you know, I guess offensive player of the year is typically not a quarterback, but like MVP, usually quarterback, might as well be most valuable quarterback. But I mean, offensive player of the year, I think is typically wide receiver, as far as I know.
Sauce has 3 picks this year.
See, that's I knew that was a ridiculous stat. I saw someone throw it around, and like I referenced it as like, I hope someone can tell me if that's the case, because I didn't actually look it up when I saw it, but it seemed a little low to say that he only had two in his whole career. But yeah, Tom, any final thoughts about this AFC South clinching matchup before we kind of bring this thing to a close?
It was a good win. I think this is a win that, coming off of a bye, the Texans really needed to get, you know, for the momentum, the mojo going into the playoffs. Obviously, with this game against Kansas City coming up, you really kind of hope that they continue this. I don't necessarily need to see them win anything. I just need to see them competitive. I need them to be in a game and in a hostile environment, go in there and be able to move the football and do the things. So this was a great start to that. I feel like when you come off of a bye, that first game is really important, because, you know, it's either going to kind of cement what y'all worked on to go into that game, or, you know, question, you know, what if we were doing, trying to get prepared for that, you know, worked out. So I love where they're at. I mean, this is a team that, you know, we talked about wins and win totals before the season, and it was 10 or 11. I think they're right on that mark. So really looking to see, you know, what they can do with these last three games. I don't know if the last game of the season will even be worth anything, which sucks because it's the Tennessee Titans and I want that get back as a fan, but
we'll just have to see what happens. Regardless of what happens, the Texans are going to treat that. I can't see them pulling starters
in that game regardless. I can. Because if you think about it, the last thing in the world you would want is somebody to get hurt going into a wild card round or a divisional round, you know, and you can treat it as a bye.
The mental toll that's getting swept by the Titans in a season would
take on this team. Only for the fans. Only for the fans. They're not going to care because they're going into a playoff game that the Titans are not.
I mean, to be fair, the Texans should be able to beat the Titans with their backups, but they've already lost to the Titans with their starters, so.
And the game will be in Tennessee.
Yeah, so, but personally, I know you're right, it's just the fans, but I would not have to say, yeah, we got swept by the Titans. We haven't been swept by any divisional opponent since D'Amico Ryans took over as the head coach, and that would just
true.
Be.
True, yeah. But I guarantee you, if it plays out that they're going to turn around and play in 6 days or 7 days, that's a mini bye that they could get for their guys to get them healthy. And I would want that. I mean, what would be worse than, oh yeah, they're beating the Tennessee Titans, you know, 17-3, you know, in Tennessee, and then Joe Mixon gets hurt, Derek Stingley Jr. gets hurt, you know,
and now they're lost. Joe Mixon got hit with a hip drop tackle.
It probably won't be the last.
Probably won't be the last.
You know, like, and in a game that meant nothing, like they can't go up. They, you know. They clearly aired and stopping Tennessee from getting to the playoffs. It means nothing.
I see it. As a fan, it's tough to look at that game and say that it doesn't matter as much as it probably wouldn't. I would hope that maybe at that point, maybe the Bills had lost two and the Texans are like, well, now we need to win this one to move into the second seed. And maybe they put in the effort for that reason, but we'll see. I mean, as far as I go, like, yeah, I'm excited about this win. I think the Texans are in a good spot. I think that the rest of this season can be treated as like a simulation for the offense. The defense is going to show up. It's going to do its thing. There is still something to play for. And if it gets to a point where there's not anything to play for, then, you know, yeah, I guess pull the starters. I am apprehensive to do that based off of how I feel about the Titans, but. That win versus the I guess that loss versus the Titans would be worth it if the Texans can, you know, make a run in the postseason. But and yeah, we were both pretty much spot on with the 10 or 11 wins. If the Texans can prove us wrong and go for 12, all for it. Go ahead and do it. But yeah, on that note, thanks for tuning in. I've been James Roy. You can find me at James Roy NFL on Instagram and Twitter. Tom is at Third Coast Tom on Twitter and at TC Tom 1 on Instagram. Those are all good ways to keep up with the show. I know this is a Tuesday release. We usually go on Mondays. I tweeted something out. I don't think it got seen by a lot of people because usually when I tweet about when the bullpen's going to release. It doesn't get seen by a lot of people, but if that's how you want to know about when the show is going to drop, that's probably a good place to follow. And yeah, as always, stay classy, Houston, and vamos Texans.
Thanks for tuning into The Bullpen, a Texans podcast. Please like, comment, subscribe, and follow along for more Texans talk from The Bullpen.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.